This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Media Explode, episode 12. The movies? Let's go to the movies. See the movies, let's go see the stars. When lives matter, big impression, what do we care? Movies are there, only happy endings. Boy, it's good, yes, that's our recipe. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Media Explode. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And Robin Richards.
Hello. How you doing, friends?
We are iFanboy, and we are here for our Media Explode, which is unlocked by the patrons over at patreon.com/iFanboy. This is the monthly show in which we talk about non-comic book media that we've been enjoying from the last month. It is an offshoot of our year-end show, the All Media Spectacular. This is the 12th episode. We're still going. It's 1 year in. It's exciting. Thanks to the patrons.
Yay.
We enjoy doing the show.
Hooray. It has become something I personally look forward to.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. So we normally start with what we've been enjoying for the last month, things we've been watching or listening to or whatever we do in our prison cells at home. And I'll start. I don't normally start. I'll start this one. I've been doing a show that I think Ron would really love.
Yep.
And it's on CNN.
Oh, I've recorded it, and I have not started watching it yet.
You know what I'm talking about. Stanley Tucci Searching for Italy.
Yes, it is on the list. It is actually probably the next thing I'm going to watch after the show I'm going to talk about.
There's a hole in the culture that Anthony Bourdain left us, very sadly, which is the celebrity travelogue show, right? And there's a bunch of them now that people are trying to do. I've really been enjoying the Stanley Tucci one on CNN. It's on Sunday nights. He's going through each region of Italy with each episode. So the first episode's Rome. You know, there's one in the Tuscany region, and there's one around Milan. This week's episode is going to be about Sicily. And he goes and explores the food and a little bit of the culture. You know, it's one of those shows. First of all, Ron, don't not have pasta at hand when you're watching it. You have to.
Oh, awesome.
Make those plans, because you have to have it.
All right.
He meets people there. He talks about the region. He talks about how food developed in that region, why the food in Milan is different than the food in Rome, why the food in Rome is different than the food in Sicily. So you get to a bit of the culture. You get a bit of the people. But it's mostly about the food. And Tucci is very charming. He has great suits. And he is a foodie. So he's well-versed in how to make these things. He cooks himself. You know, no one has Anthony Bourdain's knowledge. So most of his reactions are, wow, this is amazing food. But he can really get people to open up because he's a celebrity about what they do and why they do it. And it's a really interesting look at Italy and the food culture there and how things came to be, why people have pasta, where pasta came from, how tomatoes got to Italy. Tomatoes came from Spain. They weren't in Italy at all. It's been a wonderful little charming show. I watch it as a lark, and every week I'm looking forward to, ooh, it's Sunday night. I can watch Stanley Tucci's in Italy. It's just been a lot of fun, and I think it's a really great little travelogue for Italy. It is a great celebration of Italy. The people there that he meets are really fun. It makes you really want to go to Italy. It's just a celebration of the culture. You know, Italian food is
the best.
It's terrific.
it's up there.
You know, in the first episode of Rome, you know, we meet a Japanese chef who's coming. He makes some of the best carbonara in all of Rome, and he shows you how he does that. And it's just, it's a great look at how the Italian cuisine has influenced the entire world.
Yep.
I couldn't recommend it more to anyone who's interested in food or travel or culture or other places, and especially Ron. Again, make sure you've got pasta on hand.
Well, yeah, I have.
Eat pasta while watching it is my best recommendation.
I made an Eataly off order a couple of weeks ago, and I've got some nice Gargano pasta. You know, I got Vesuvios, which are little spirals that look like a little volcano, because I thought the kids would like
that. It's already Bucco's place.
Yeah, it is. It's funny, though, because our mutual friend Ben Simpson is the one who turned me on to the show.
Yeah,
he had posted about it, I think, before it started. I think he saw it before it came out or whatever. And I was like, ooh. And so I set the DVR to record it, and I just haven't had time to start watching it yet. And once I finish the show we're currently watching, then the plan is to go right into that. And I imagine it's going to make me want to eat lots of pasta.
It will. And the thing is about Tucci, he lives in London, so he's basically kind of a European at this point. He spends a lot of time in Italy. He lived in Italy as a young kid. His father was a teacher and did a year sabbatical learning art in Florence. So he lived in Florence for a year. So he has a lot of experience with the culture and the language. And so he feels very much at home. So you get a very sense of, it's not a total outsider coming in. He feels like he's part of the culture a little bit. And he's also super charming and funny. And I don't know how he's so fit when he eats all that pasta and everything.
He was so mean to Tom Hanks in The Terminal, though.
He really was.
But he's so great. And he has great suits. I've been enjoying it on every level. It's been one of my favorite things. You know, I've been watching a lot of things recently, but that's one of my favorites.
That's great.
And I learned my lesson, Ron. The first time I watched it, I didn't have pasta. And the second time, I made sure I made pasta. One time, I had pizza ready. Like, I always made sure I had something ready to go for the show, because you're going to want nothing more than to have Italian food while watching it. You know, carbonara in the first episode is amazing. And then you go to the north, and they don't really make pasta. It's more about risotto, and that's all a whole different story. And then, you know, it's just been true. And then there's the whole Parma, you know, the ham and the cheese. It's terrific.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
I'm salivating now thinking about it.
Nice. All right. Well, so my show, I think, is going to be one that, Connor, I'll be surprised if you had heard of it, but I imagine you're immediately going to add it and start watching it. So we've talked in this past year about Mythic Quest, Josh had suggested, and Mythic Quest ended up giving us what I thought was one of the best bit of quarantine-themed content with that last quarantine episode. And when you think about other people who tried to create content during this past year and the time of COVID and all stuff like that, you know, you get mixed results and that sort of thing. But I recently discovered one that it's more than a half a year. It's well more than a half a year old. It was on the BBC and recently came over to Hulu. But Connor, what if I told you that there was a 6-episode series starring Michael Sheen and David Tennant?
I started to watch that.
Staged?
A while ago. I didn't get very far.
Oh, Connor, it is so good.
Okay.
It's called Staged, and the premise is that COVID has struck, and right before the pandemic, Michael Sheen and David Tennant were set to star together in a play. Luigi Pirandello's 6 characters in search of an author, and the pandemic has canceled all that. But the director of the play has come up with the idea that they can keep working on the play via Zoom or via, you know, video conferencing. And then when the pandemic's over, they'll just be ready to go.
Right.
And so what you get is it's a half an hour show that's filmed primarily via video conferencing, although Tennant has filmed some bits in his house. You can tell he has a camera and like did some stuff by himself. But it stars Michael Sheen, David Tennant, both their wives, and this guy Simon Evans, who wrote and directed this, who also stars in it. He plays the director of the play. And, you know, we know that Sheen and Tennant are friends, and they work together in Good Omens. And the first third of the show is just them on Zoom talking to each other, and it's hysterical. It is fantastic. And then, of course, stuff happens and drama ensues. And there's actually like several subplots going through this very simple format of a show. And it's fantastic. And I'm delighted because we're one episode away from finishing the first season. And not only did I find out that there was a second season, but the second season is over. And that just got added to Hulu. So as soon as we finish the first season, we're going to go right into the second season. But like, you know, give me, you know, 6 episodes, half hour episodes of anything with Michael Sheen and David Tennant, and I'm there. Like, oh, just it's delightful.
They're great actors and they're great together.
the banter and the wit and like the it's very like it's very, very good. Like, and the thing is, I know that this is such a niche thing. Like, you've got to be a Michael Sheen fan or a David Tennant fan or both of them in order. Like, this is why Josh, I don't think, like, I'm not surprised it didn't stick with you or you're not interested in it, because you're not as into Sheen as we are. But he I just love him. He's so fantastic.
I like him as an actor.
Yeah,
I don't, you know, this
no
is,
but like, as the cult of Michael Sheen,
whatever. No, I think I started to watch it one day. I was like looking for something to watch and I couldn't find the thing that was right for my mood. And I sort of started running, you know, I thought I'd go back, but it was a little, you know, cool.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was a little, I don't know. I like to watch them both work a whole lot, but I don't know that I want to hang out with them as people.
Oh, I could just like we,
I know.
Like, my wife and I were saying that, like, once the plot kind of picked up and like there was conflict and stuff like that, we're like, if the show was just a half an hour of them talking on Zoom, we would watch that because it's so fun. Like, it's that they're, you could tell they're friends and the way they, you know, kind of you know, kind of work off each other and that sort of thing. Just so much fun. So much.
They're both quite hairy.
Hairy. Well, Sheen's really, with the hair and the beard, has really kind of let himself go. But fun fact about Michael Sheen, tracing his partners, he was with Kate Beckinsale from 1995 to 2003.
Wow.
Then he was with a woman named Lorraine Stewart from 2004 to 2010. Then he was with Rachel McAdams from 2010 to 2013. Then Sarah Silverman from 2014 to 2018.
That's weird.
Dude's fascinating. I didn't know that.
Hmm.
He's been in everything.
He's very charming.
He's the best. I forgot he was on 30 Rock.
He's Welsh.
Yeah, he is Welsh. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of jokes about that between him, him being Welsh and Tennant being Scottish. There's a lot of that humor, you know.
Yeah.
It's just delightful. I can't recommend it more. And like, the thing is, like, the, you know, half hour show, you can easily just watch a, you know, an episode and not, you know, like, and we stretched it out over, you know, over the span of like a week and a half, but it's not a huge lift. And it's just a nice little, you know, the thing is that you got to be okay with the fact that it's pandemic theme. That's the thing. Like, if you don't want to be reminded of that, don't watch this.
But I think that's had a lot to do with it. Like, I was like, I want to not watch things about the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. Largely. And the thing is, it's not necessarily about the pandemic. It's just that's the situation they're in.
Sure. No, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is interesting because you see shows struggling with that, how to deal with it. You know, there are shows that start off like, oh, we're going to deal with the pandemic. It'll be a part of our show. And then they just totally forget about it because it's annoying.
Right.
Who wants to deal with people, their cast never getting to leave their house or wearing masks, so they stop doing it, or they sort of half-heartedly do it and it just doesn't work.
Right.
You know, like the Conners did that and This Is Us did that. New Amsterdam, the medical show, has done it probably most because it's dealing with medical problems. But, like, you know, you almost forget, oh, right, there's a pandemic in this world, but they're not dealing with it at all. No one's wearing masks. And it's almost at this point, it's better just to not deal with it. Just
interesting side note of that is that one of my favorite things is This American Life. I've been listening to that radio show / podcast for, since I was in college, every month. And every single episode has been about the pandemic for a year, and I'm tired of it.
Right.
Like, but there's nothing else for them to report on. I can't blame them for that.
Yeah, what else are they going to do?
But it's just like, that's not what I liked about it was sort of the variety. They talk about all these different things, but it's so all encompassing that's all it, you know, it's this apocalyptic kind of thing. Like, oh, that's all we can talk about because it's all you can do.
What else are they going to report on?
Yeah, right. And it's not fiction, so they can't obviously, but it's a different sort of version of that, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I feel like I haven't been watching any TV shows very much. Lately, Lindsay and I will just pick a movie. And so what we've been doing is watching every Denzel movie that we can find.
Didn't we do this earlier? Like in episode 2?
I don't know. But either way, in the past 2 weeks, we've done He Got Game, Antoine Fisher. I think we did. I talked about Safe House, which was the first one that we watched last time. Not very good. And then we did Remember the Titans the other night, which I had never seen. Which is basically like this weird, it came out after the Friday Night Lights book, but before the TV show and movie. And there's a lot of Coach Taylor in that, but it's Denzel. And it's like an integrated team in the 70s, early 70s. And it was like, I could watch this movie forever. It's fantastic. It's been a lot of fun. We realize he doesn't do a lot of funny things. He's not super into being funny. And you know, actually, you know where this started? Because I watched The Little Things, which is that movie that came to HBO Max, and it was him and Jared Leto and Freddie Mercury, Rami Malek.
Rami Malek, yep.
And I hated it. It's terrible. And but I had said something to Connor, and I was like, but Denzel was good. And you were like, yeah, water is wet. What else is new? And that had a little bit to do with sort of kickstarting a thing. And so we're going to keep, and I watched Training Day or something. So I've done like 9 or 10 of them in the last month.
I'm sad that in, what's the movie? The train movie.
Oh, Unstoppable.
It's fallen off the HBO rotation. Oh. I could certainly go search for it, but I was like just stumbling on it every day.
Sure.
And it for like 3 months, it was just on the heavy rotation. I was like, oh, that's cool. I'll just watch for 45 minutes or whatever, but now it's off the rotation.
What's interesting, though, is that remember the Titans was on Disney Plus, and also on Disney Plus are a ton of other period inspirational sports movies. And I was like, oh, I could get lost in this. Yeah. Like, it was like, I'm going to watch Miracle. I'm going to watch that one about Dennis Quaid, who becomes a baseball player later.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, I love inspirational sports movies. There's nothing wrong with them. We watched The Hurricane. It's another one of those. One of the things that I guess is really interesting is that there's a lot of conversation over the past couple of years as we talk about justice and Black Lives Matters and all these things. And I'm not meaning to trivialize it. It's just shorthand. This stuff has been in Denzel's movies. I mean, the exact same conversation. And I'm sure, and I know that it existed long before that, but like so many of them were about that. You know, like we watched The Hurricane was about that.
Yeah.
He Got Game is about that. Antoine Fisher is about that. Like it goes on and on. And it's.
What's the one he did about healthcare?
Oh, Man on Fire?
No. Healthcare. Not Revenge.
John Q.
That's John, the one. Yeah.
I haven't seen either of those. They're on the list. They're coming.
Yeah. I'm reinforcing your point.
Yeah. It's racial stuff. There's class stuff. There's all these things that, and it, he's
did you see Fences?
Very. I started it once and didn't finish it, and then didn't go back. But I'm going to. He directed Antoine Fisher. Was not a great movie, but the performances from him and the lead guy who played Antoine Fisher were really good. And he was the guy who, like, we started. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name off the. But he played Booby Miles in Friday Night Lights, and he's been in a billion movies. And I was like, I never knew that was the same guy. He's a great actor. We were thinking of maybe taking a little hiatus because
Derek Luke.
Yeah, him. Look at him. His. He's been in a ton of things. He's really great.
Friday Night Lights, like, yeah.
Yeah, tons of stuff, but brilliant in that movie. We might take a little break. What I found is that Tom Hanks' palate cleanser is really nice to sort of loosen things up a little. And then the other day I said to Lindsay, wait, has Denzel ever been in a movie with, and don't answer this, has he ever been in a movie with Tom Hanks? And neither of us could think of it. Then like a day later I go, fucking Philadelphia. And I'm like, shit.
Oh, jeez.
Big miss.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. So that's the theme. We're gonna keep going with those.
Well, that's actually a great segue to our main point of discussion this month. You know, we had the Oscar nominations come out this past week. And a very strange year of movies.
Very strange year.
There were basically movies for 2 months in the beginning of the year, and then the rest became all streaming films. So you had a very interesting and eclectic group of nominees, as I think we were all expecting it to happen. Even then, there were a lot of surprises in the nominations.
Important to note that the Oscars usually happen at the end of February, and this year they're happening at the end of April. What I'm not clear is, like, so a requirement has always been that it needs to have run in theaters in some way, shape, or form, right? There's a certain minimum there. Did they waive that this year? Or
they had
still...
to have. Yeah, they had to have.
Did they?
Then they must have.
No, I don't know if they did.
Talk about the thing, and I will look into it.
Yeah, because that's my thing, is that because, like, to your point, you know, theaters were closed for most of the year, but, you know, but a bunch of movies that were nominated did have, like, festival runs and things like that. I'm wondering if they're counting that before the pandemic started, you know.
But the festivals were all virtual.
I have an answer.
Okay,
what is it? New York Times, only films that had a previously planned theatrical release are still eligible for Oscar consideration.
Interesting. So they,
if they had like been
a plan.
Officially planned, you know, like that was the thing that was going to happen, but it didn't.
Got it.
Then it counts.
Okay.
They had to make that change because there was just no way. Even the festivals weren't even in person. They were online. So they had to have made that change. The Oscars are in a very interesting place in time. And I think this year is an anomaly year, obviously, because of the world. It may be, again, next year is another anomaly. Who knows how this thing plays out, this thing being the pandemic.
We're pretty far into this year.
We're only getting into the cycle of vaccinations, so we don't know how what's going to happen. I would not be surprised if this is exactly the same next year. But you have what I like to call. So this year we had 8 films nominated for Best Picture. They're basically 8 Moonlights. Super indie.
I don't know about that. I don't know. For the most part, that's not accurate. That is not accurate.
None of these films are blockbusters if they come out in theaters.
No.
None of these films are making any money. These are all super low-budget prestige picture nominees, all of them. The only one that's not is basically the Trial of Chicago 7.
I also don't agree with that either.
Which one is this a blockbuster?
I agree with you that it's a blockbuster, but the type of movie that you're describing in terms of like a prestige but Trial of Chicago 7 is a standard historical, like,
that's the only one that's on the borderline of not being. The rest of them are all low budget.
And even that doesn't fill the seats.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I'm not saying it fills the theaters or not, but I do agree with you that it is not the normal type of film, because blockbusters also don't often get nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, but the point is, these are all at one end of the spectrum.
Yeah, all right.
Knocking the quality of them.
These are representatives from corners of the spectrum. They're not all from the same corner of the spectrum.
I would disagree with
that. Mank is very much the Hollywood talking about itself, you know, kind of Hollywood history, like that sort of thing, checks that box off. I don't know.
Super low budget prestige pictures. They're great. Those are often my favorite
thematically
films.
Thematically, they're not the same. I'm talking about
the same type of films. Like, that's what, you know, like, I feel like Moonlight is a much different film than Mank or Judas and the Black Messiah.
I'm talking about the size of the picture and the fact that most people aren't going to see these films.
Right.
You know, these are very small budget, low budget prestige films. Yeah. Which are great and often win a lot of awards.
A lot of auteur director kind of things going on here. You know what? It's not a studio picture in there. That's what you're saying, basically.
There's not a studio picture in there. And the thing that I'm saying is, you look at this list, and I think it's very representative of the past year of film. And in the pandemic, you've had a time where film has been really subsumed by TV, even more so than in the past. And as we discussed amongst ourselves a couple of weeks ago, you know, on a Friday night, I was like, let's watch a film. Let's watch one of these big films that are being touted as, you know, Oscar bait. Let's go through the list. And every single one of them seemed like a downer. And we ended up watching a TV show. We don't want to be bummed out on a Friday night. Let's watch Schitt's Creek.
Well, this is the thing with why we started watching the Denzel movies.
Right.
You know, a lot of times on a weekend, what we'll do is, if we don't get to go out, we'll still rent like a movie. There isn't a new one. It's not like a movie you'd want to go see in the theater.
Yeah.
There's not, most of these are ones that you would probably wait. You know,
if
you're an adult with kids and you can't go to the movies all the time, when you go to the movies, you're going to want to go to something that really kind of deserves to be on a really big screen. And most of these are not that kind of thing that you'd be like, oh, I have to get to the theater for this.
The only one I'd say would be Mank, only because of the cinematography. But,
absolutely. Yeah. But even so, that depends on
the type of moviegoer you are. Like, Promising Young Woman is 100% a movie I would have gone to see in the theaters. Okay. Like, you know, Sound of Metal, probably the same
90%.
Yeah.
We are also different. We normally, the three of us would normally go see these films in theaters, but I think most people don't need to see these movies in theaters.
Yeah. Well, I will say though that this year it's like, cause part of the, I try to see as many of the best pictures as I can. And each year it's like, how many did I actually get to see? Did I see them all or not? And that sort of thing. And when the nominations came out, I was shocked and surprised to see that I'd seen them all except two, which is much higher than I thought it would have been,
I was surprised that I hadn't heard of most of them.
I still need to see Minari, which was on my list before the nominations.
Yes, that's the one I'm most excited to see.
Yeah. And then me and my wife, after watching the Golden Globes and seeing the clips from The Father, were like, oh, we're not going to watch that because of that downer point. Yep. But I will say that, like, Nomadland was a film that I'd heard for a couple of weeks. Once it was available on Hulu, I'm like, oh, I want to watch it. Everyone's talking about it. But, like, the trailer does make it seem like a downer. After watching it, it was not a downer at all. Like, the movie had a much different vibe than what the marketing is showing it to be.
Was it fun?
I don't know if it was fun. No, it's not like a fun movie. That's a different, you know, like, but it was good. It was really good. The more I thought about it after seeing it, the more I really liked it. And I really like, and Frances McDormand is great. And Straythorn's in it. And he's always great. But he wasn't doing that accent from the Expanse, thank God.
The thing is that, like, in a normal everyday year, I would be excited to see all these films. But the world we're living in, I'm not excited to see super downer films right now. I need to see Triumph of the Human Spirit.
When we were chatting was, where's the Ted Lasso of movies?
Where's The Martian? Where's the film where they all get together to do something great? Is it Triumph of the Human Spirit? Like, again, normal year, awesome. But, like, I just can't be bummed out any more than I'm already bummed out right now.
Kind of crazy that Tenet didn't get a Best Picture nod.
Well, it was very mixed reviews for Tenet. It was very.
I understand mixed. That, but at least like it. Of everything that I saw, you know, that's the closest that I could like. We're not here to talk about that movie, but like basically my take on that was just that like, wow, that was really well done and executed and interesting. And I don't know that I liked it, but I have thought about it since like it's like a really well-made movie.
I'm shocked that Tenet didn't get nominated for anything in the same way. I'm shocked that Borat got as many nominations as it did.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just an interesting place for the films to be in right now, where it seems like these films were all made previous to this year. You know, it's not a reaction to this year. We haven't seen those films yet. But yeah. Still, in terms of a year where everyone is bummed out, everyone's a little bit low-key depressed, like, all of these films are mining sadness in some way or another. Even if it ends up being sad, Nomadland is still about how much it sucks to be poor. I don't want to revel in that right now.
Nomadland is not about how much it sucks to be poor.
Is it about the integrity of the human spirit, even if you are poor?
No. I would say it is about the one woman's dealing with loss and choosing not to dwell in where her life was and you know just be. Active and moving versus stuck and mourning.
And how much of it is about poor people having to go from job to job in these nomad situations?
No, very, very little. That is backdrop.
That is against everything I've read about the film.
Yeah, watch the movie.
I know. Everything I've read about it makes it sound like that's what it's about. So I don't want to dwell on that right now.
It is not. It is absolutely not. That is the backdrop. That is you find out a lot about like there's a whole under layer of work or workers or type of workers that I didn't even know existed that found out from that movie. The movie is not about that. The movie is about Frances McDormand and where she is in her life and the choices that she's made and why she's choosing to live the life the way she is.
Well, it's not something I'm excited to watch on a Friday night.
But I'm challenged, like, watch it because it is beautiful. It's beautifully shot. It's filmed in parts of the country that I never go to or see as much. And like some of the locations and stuff like that were, I mean, straight up breathtaking. And some of the subtleties in the relationships of the film that, you know, like you read, it's like, oh, it's a homeless woman who lives in a van. It's like, honestly, it is so much more than that. It put all the preconceived notions aside, go and watch it. It is a modest, quiet, but like also stunningly beautiful. And I thought about it for days afterwards. Film, like it is.
You make me want to watch it, and I didn't. And my wife watched it, and I didn't really care. Yeah. She liked it.
I know it was. I went into. I put off watching it for weeks. I'm like, I don't want to see. Because I heard Frances McDormand shits in a bucket, and like, and all this sort of stuff. But like. After we finished it, both me and my wife were like, wow, that was not what I thought it was going to be. And like we talked about it for a week afterwards. Like that's the sign of a good film. Like now I understand why it won the Golden Globe. Like it is really good.
I still think that the basic thing going on here is the same thing that we talked about however many months ago, is that like there's a certain amount of magic that goes out of it when you're watching at home.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, there is. Yeah.
You know, and so that has to do with. You don't know what any of these movies would have felt like to see in a theater. I don't know what it would have felt like to see Mank in a theater. What I do know is that I watched it at home and I had to stop an hour in and then I went back a couple days later and finished it.
Which is not the way to watch anything.
I know, but that's, you know, that's where we are. And it's funny because nothing has really undercut the idea of sort of the difference really between TV and film or streaming and whatever like this year. Like it really, like, what does a movie mean anymore now? Is it a 2-hour single episode TV show that's streaming just like the TV show streaming? Like this is because there's a bigger celebrity in it? Like, I don't even know. Like all that stuff is getting flattened out. And I think it makes this seem like we're doing the motions, you know, we're doing the motions of doing the Academy Awards, but it's, you know, it's the weird year.
Yeah.
At the least.
It also puts in stark relief how much Hollywood has given up the middle ground to TV.
Sure.
There's these nominees and there's the Avengers movies and there's nothing in between anymore.
Yep.
And like, again, I go back to the Martian only because I was trying to think of a movie that was a Best Picture nominee and like a crowd pleaser and like a blockbuster and also like a Triumph of the Human Spirit film. And I don't know the last time that was many years ago.
13, 14?
Yeah, that's like 7 years ago. So, like, you know, that kind of movie is what I'm looking for most nights because, again, the world we're living in is terrible and sad. And it's like, I just don't want to spend 2 hours being sad watching a film. So that's why I end up watching a TV show that's either funny or whatever. And that's where the ground's been ceded to the streamers where, you know, Coming to America comes out on Amazon and not in theaters. I know it was meant to be coming to theaters, but it didn't.
One thing that's really interesting is that, you know, films like these sort of small market, you know, I'm going to say art house theater, just for lack of a better term, but they're kind of art house prestige movies. You know, a lot of times these are the movies that are the places where they can have conversations about these kinds of issues that, you know, aren't talked about all the time. But I do feel like over the last year, all we talk about are issues like this all the time. Yeah. And so, whereas it used to be in a movie, you'd have a chance to sort of experience these kinds of things. Let's just say, you know, you learn about the Black Panther movement in Chicago in the 60s. But literally, that's like what half the news is about. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that, like, it isn't opening a door to another world. It's just more conversation in a fictional form about all the things that are wrong with society.
Well, part of it is that it's the balance, right? Because like there's always those type of movies that are, you know, critical of the world around us or makes you think about it. But then at the same time, there are the like book smart, you know, which is, you know, like the Night of Graduation, high school, you know, kind of coming of age film types, you know. And this year we seem to lack any of the lighthearted films
wouldn't have really been an Oscar nominated movie. But I think that also there's a larger trend that this is really a culmination of, is that all the movies that have to win an award have to deal with a social issue of some kind or be talking about righting some wrong or just making sure people know about something that's really wrong in the world. And there isn't, you know, Apollo 13.
Right.
Whereas before, like if when Philadelphia won, you know, it was shining a light on everything. But we know about that kind of thing now because that's all that, you know, that's so much of what social media and news has become. And again, that's good that we know all those things. But I think because of how much of the social conversation, the political conversation has dominated our life, we need to have some fun and we need to have quality movies that are really good and really entertaining at the same time and not just a continuation of the themes that are taken over in social media. And again, I'm not saying you shouldn't have these conversations, but it feels like
we have no other outlet.
And that's all there is. And so it's like as if like we're all on a low carb diet and we can just eat chicken breasts that have been steamed constantly and they've been prepared really nicely. But can we eat a pizza that's really good too sometime? Like there's a real lack of enjoyment, not even entertainment, enjoyment. It's funny because Connor, you know, your thing is was talking about The Martian or something like that, you know, and I watch space race stuff constantly because that is the thing that can easily most easily get me to that place where I cannot think of humans as horrible. It's a bunch of people working together and they accomplish something amazing, and it's the last time that we were all on board for something like that. So we watched a ton of that. I watched The Right Stuff and I watched we watched Apollo 13. I watched From the Earth to the Moon again. I watched The Martian again. Like I love that shit and I want more of that. And you know, like I've seen a handful of these movies, you know, I didn't love any of the ones that I saw. I like Mank a lot, but that's a very specific thing.
I don't know. It's looking at the best pictures, right? I haven't seen The Father. I just watched Judas and the Black Messiah was the last one I watched, which I thought was very, very good.
It was not enjoyable.
No, it was enjoyable, but rough. But yeah,
you wouldn't watch it again,
right? Yeah, good point. Mank, I loved. I haven't seen Minari yet. Nomadland, I talked about already. I loved Promising Young Woman. I thought that was great. Sound of Metal, I talked on this show back in November about. I thought Sound of Metal is awesome. Like
I love it.
That was great. And I really enjoyed Trial of Chicago 7. Like I really liked that. So.
I don't think it's the best picture though.
No, but I get why it's there because the this is your historical.
There's nothing else there.
You tell you what, Trial of Chicago 7 is the closest you've got to a Hollywood movie in here.
Yes. Yep.
I mean, other than Mank, it's got what's his face,
the guy who played the Zodiac Killer.
He wasn't the Zodiac Killer.
No, he wasn't. But who we thought he was going to be. He's the best.
Yes, he is. I can't think of, he was on Drew Carey, and Lindsay really liked him a lot. I can't think of his name right now.
And Frank Langella is amazing. Did Frank Langella get nominated? He should have been. John Carroll Lynch. He's fantastic.
John Carroll Lynch. That's it. Yeah. He is fantastic. He's one of those guys when he shows up in anything, like, that guy's great.
Yeah.
The real question is, I think, because these films are mostly all made prior to the pandemic, is what happens next year?
Next year is going to be just fucking.
Because films are being made, but not to the normal extent.
You know, there's also films being held back too.
I'm going to be watching movies looking for how COVID affected their production. Be looking in a shot and see. I just know I'll be looking for that. Well, what's really interesting is that I like war movies, right? I don't like movies about the current kind of conflicts that we're in. I wouldn't watch Middle East desert movies because
You don't like Three Kings or whatever that was?
That is a great movie. Also that was actually about the war that took place 10 years before it was made, so it's a little different.
Right.
But I don't know how you're gonna get away. Like, there's gonna be so much content.
There's no contextualization
about people.
For it.
Yes. Yeah. There's gonna be so much content about COVID. And I don't blame anybody for doing it, but it's going to be.
What I'm hopeful for is what we saw, and I think we talked about this. I don't know if we talked about it on a show, but we talked about this. But if you look at 1947, that was the year that It's a Wonderful Life came out, but also Miracle on 34th Street and another kind of lighthearted Christmas movie, right? And then Elf came out in 2003, as did Bad Santa, whatever. All these lighthearted Christmas movies come out 2 years after the horrible thing. So 2 years after World War II and 2 years after 9/11.
But that's 2 years from now.
Yeah, right. No, exactly.
That's my point. We got you're looking at this list going, that's a bummer. Next year is going to be worse. Although,
no, because next year is going to be the stuff that was in pre-production before this started.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, then the year after that. Either way, we've got 2 years before we get out of it.
Right.
And we have the even if they were to start all the party stuff at the end of this year. And listen, I don't want it to sound like, I want really happy, fun movies or whatever.
I think the point is that you need a mix.
Yes.
Yeah, you need a mix.
There's not a mix this year. This mix is all bummers.
Yeah.
And... I said,
I will acknowledge that there's no lighthearted, uplifting, kind of optimistic one.
I don't think lighthearted is the word, because that doesn't usually end up in that category anyway.
Right. No. You're right. But you know what I mean.
There's no Triumph of the Human Spirit films. There's no Hidden Figures. That kind of thing.
Christ, what was the one about the British workers and they strip?
Full Monty.
Yeah, Full Monty, kind of
thing.
And
that was a low budget, but it was fun, and you felt good about people. Again, these are all important films, and these are all important stories, and any other year where they're mixed in, that'd be great. But, again, on a Friday night, I look at the list, I go, I don't
acknowledge that on a regular year, not all these movies get nominated.
Oh, for sure not.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
But it's also an interesting year. Who knows what's going to happen, because... it's all strange.
Right.
Yeah.
I love The Moonlight. I never watched it again since I saw it in the theaters.
I keep going back to this idea that it used to be, and this was in the 70s, you have a movie like The Godfather, and it is a huge critical success. It is a huge popular success. It makes a shit ton of money. You want it, it's entertaining. You want to go back and watch it. And every year that we've gotten away from that, the awards type movies, the prestige movies have nothing to do with being entertaining or popular.
They get smaller and smaller. And
right.
Yeah. I mean, Titanic was probably, I don't think that was a great movie, but it was.
Since Lord of the Rings, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good example. That's cinema. That's a movie. And I can see why. But there's there's no excuse other than the stuff that they're holding back. A lot of stuff would have been completed before COVID. So,
but I go back to the idea that Hollywood has ceded the ground. What got held back is the blockbuster end of the spectrum. This is the other end of the spectrum, and there's nothing in between. Last year or was it the year before, you had Black Panther nominated for Best Picture, coming from the blockbuster end of the spectrum. But you're not going to get a lot of blockbuster films nominated for Best Picture. So you're really, by giving up the middle ground to the streamers, having all romantic comedies. All comedies basically coming out in streaming services instead of into your local theater, you're only going to end up with this end of things, which is, again, the bummer end, as I call it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's reductive of it. You like film. You like films like these, and that's
I love these films. I want to mix.
No, totally. And I think, but you know, this still is related to that.
I'm sure I'll watch all these and enjoy 7 or 8 of them. You know, right. I'm sure I will.
You know, like it's the Chinese and Russian cinema thing. Like, you need blockbuster movies that can be translated into other languages, and then the art house movies, and that middle adult drama and comedy. And you know, those middle you're just gone. And I think this is another effect of that. And it sucks because it was really good for a while. You know, like it was, and I guess that's the trade off for like amazing television that didn't exist before.
I'd rather have the films.
I'd like a blend.
Yeah, I'd rather go to the movies and watch a comedy.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than I can laugh on my couch by myself. There's nothing better than watching in a theater full of people who are all laughing together.
Uh-huh. Honestly, I can't remember the last good comedy I've seen.
Role Models, 2008, in a theater.
Yeah.
Like, that was, to me, and I know it's not like a great comedy, but it's like the last comedy that I saw in a theater that I loved. I know I laughed pretty good at Bridesmaids.
Think about this. All three of us saw Borat together, the first Borat, in a theater, and it was like bedlam in that theater.
It was pretty great.
Watching it by yourself on the couch, or with your wife or whoever, on the couch, and you're both laughing, but it's not the same as the bedlam, the absolute bedlam as that first film in a theater that was packed full of people.
Yep.
Watching a comedy at home, a feature film comedy at home, there's a thing where I think you can only laugh for so long by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I can't make it through an entire movie with the same energy that you have at the beginning. And like laughing at it. But when you're surrounded by people who are having fun and it builds that way, it's a different, yeah, you're right. It's a different experience. I mean, that's why sitcoms are a half an hour. They don't make hour long comedy shows for a reason.
Again, it's a very strange year. This might be the first year where you really sort of encapsulate what's happening to Hollywood is that you're only getting these prestige movies made other than Black Widow or.
I will say Batman. We're talking about best picture, that's a thing. But as we get down into the actor stuff, like best actor, best actress, you know, that's when it really gets interesting because these people do get to do really interesting work in these kinds of
movies. Oh, yeah, they're all doing great work. Of course they are.
So I think in that, like, as I'm looking at the best actor category, that's a good list. That's some strong stuff in that way. Mm-hmm. Really? Daniel Kaluuya got supporting actor.
Yeah, I mean that we talked. I talked when the noms came out. I said that
they were both nominated for supporting actor. Which is the question: who was the lead of that film?
Best actor, but my guess is that's the Chadwick Boseman thing.
Was he? I didn't see that movie. I can get the sense that he was the lead from the trailer.
So my sense is that you know that Chadwick is the lock for best actor and give the Black Messiah guys a chance in the supporting category.
I would. By the way, I'd much rather Gary Oldman win for this instead of as Winston Churchill.
No, God, no. He was so miscast, Mank.
I don't care. I don't even know the difference. I just like watching him.
He was great in the Churchill movie.
I didn't like that movie.
Okay, but he was great in
Yes, he was. No, absolutely. I think Lakeith Stanfield was the lead in that movie. I don't know who else would be. Well, Sacha Baron Cohen was not the lead in Trial of Chicago 7. If anybody was, Eddie Redmayne was. But that's even...
That film was almost such a perfect ensemble that there wasn't
it was. A lead. It was a total ensemble movie. Cast. Yeah,
there wasn't a lead.
Yeah.
Theoretically, it was Redmayne, but not really.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a very strange year. It's going to be, not that I care really, but I think it's going to be a huge disaster in terms of TV watching, much like the Globes.
Hillbilly was not a good movie, by the way, but Glenn Close was amazing.
Who's hosting the Oscars this year, Connor?
I don't think they announced. I don't think they announced it.
I got to imagine they watch the Globes and they're like, we need to, like, I don't know.
I mean, this is a separate subject, but from a TV perspective, production perspective, like the Emmys did such a great job with it.
Yeah.
The Globes did a horrible job with it. And it was almost like no one had watched the Emmys and learned how to make a show in this era. It was almost like they swapped. Like the Emmys were the ones that learned from the Globes as you know, instead of vice versa. It was like shockingly poorly produced.
Yeah.
The Oscars going to be all in person. Like the Grammys. They're not doing any Zoom stuff.
All right.
They've already announced that it's all going to be in person. It's going to be at the train station downtown LA, Union Station.
Oh, that's beautiful there.
The Grammys were interesting as a production piece. It felt very intimate. It was just all these people in the tables, but it was just the people who were nominated. So it felt very much like almost the original Oscars, which were on the radio, where they just sort of handed out the awards in like an hour.
All right.
It felt very much like that. Like, there's just the people there who were nominated were there, no one else. And they might make a really... And Steven Soderbergh's one of the producers of the show. So it might be an interesting sort of intimate, very un-Hollywood, almost very Hollywood-like affair, where it's just these very fabulous people.
Old Hollywood.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a disaster. No one's going
to
watch it.
As I scroll down to the bottom of this Variety listing, the first article that they recommend me is why Lakeith Stanfield was nominated supporting and not lead actor. I was like, oh, that's perfect.
There it is.
I'll report that. He was so good. It's like he had one actor who was like way over, you know, blown and doing the thing as he was supposed to. And then one guy who was just subtle as hell.
Yeah.
It's a nice contrast.
He's good in everything.
He's so good. He's a guy who whenever he shows up in anything, I go, oh, that guy. Like, I'm always very happy to see him. He's got a shit ton of range. Like, he could just be a lot of different things.
Well, you know, if you look for him on Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
These roles, it's a huge, huge range. Mm-hmm. He's terrific. He's like a emerging star.
Yeah, definitely.
Again, tons of interesting films. I'm excited to watch as many as I can. Now that the nominees are out, I'm going to try to watch as many as I can. But like, again, I go back to 2 weeks ago on a Friday night where I'm like, which movie are we going to watch? I don't want to feel bad about myself and the world. I'm going to watch Schitt's Creek.
Yeah. I'll tell you something. When I watched Mank, which I was really looking forward to because I'm a huge David Fincher fan and I totally enjoyed it, I ended up watching Citizen Kane 2 times. That's what came out of that. I didn't go back and watch Mank again. I was like, oh, shit, let's just watch Citizen Kane.
I enjoyed Mank. I can't imagine ever watching it again.
Yeah, I agree. I'd honestly rather read a book about it.
I've watched most Fincher films twice, at least.
Uh-huh.
But I can't imagine watching Mank again.
I would watch Zodiac again.
Yeah.
The last 10, 12 years, I've loved every one of those movies other than maybe Benjamin Button. But I've even seen that twice.
Yeah.
I've seen most of those at least 5 times.
Yeah.
And then...
Fincher's really good.
Yeah.
He's so good.
He is. And anybody who's sort of that serious and that precise who can still make a movie that is so entertaining.
Yep.
I know that people were like, people didn't really like Gone Girl all that much. But I've watched that 3, 4, 5 times.
Wow.
I love that movie.
Oh, that was good. I remember watching it.
I didn't dislike it, but I don't think I've seen it just once.
Oh, man. I mean, like the work that God, everybody in that movie is doing. Ben Affleck being a complete stupid doof, you know. I love that movie, but I love David Fincher. There's something about the way that he makes movies. I didn't even like Benjamin Button, but I watched it again.
But you're not going to see one in a theater maybe ever because he signed a long-term deal with Netflix.
Yeah,
well, if he wants Oscar nominations, they're gonna have to put it in the theater somewhere, and I live close enough to Boston that I've got a shot. I can't tell you how many times I watch Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, and I don't understand that because that's a fucked up movie.
Very strange year. It'll be very interesting, Ron, to do our yearly Oscar pool on this one.
I know. I was thinking about that the other day. It's gonna be like
there's
nothing to grab onto for
it's crapshoot.
Yeah, it's a crapshoot. Yeah,
there's no precedence for what this Oscar ceremony is gonna be like.
Yeah,
you know, you don't get the normal.
Fair, they're always crapshoots for me because I always get everything wrong because I have no idea.
You don't get the festivals. You don't get the all those awards that go through. It's just a very bizarre year.
Yeah,
I think we just did a version of our show that was like our complaint about these movies and COVID shows. I think that's what we just did.
What do you mean?
We bitched about it and how it was.
No, we bitched about the state of the movies that are only about one thing. We all said many times these movies are all great movies.
I'll tell you what the saving grace for this, though, is going to be is that anybody listening to this can get the original recording of the show as an NFT.
right.
Just go to iFamily.
$10 million.
Yeah.
So. $10 million worth of bidding stars.
You know what? The saving grace of this is that somebody is going to go out there and watch one of the other movies that we mentioned.
Yeah.
Somebody is going to be like, shit, I haven't watched The Martian for a while. I think I will watch Gone Girl again. You know what? It's time to go check out Citizen Kane again. And that is the saving grace of this show.
Yeah.
Or somebody's going to go watch Judas and the Black Messiah, who didn't before, because we talked about how great those actors were. And that is a worthwhile time, too. Super fucking bummer by the end.
I will make one last point before we go, is that last year's Best Picture winner was Parasite.
Yep.
You know, outsider film from South Korea had a very strong message about income inequality, but did it in a really entertaining way.
It was really good. It was really good.
And I'm not saying these other Best Picture movies aren't good, but what I'm saying is Parasite was super fun.
Yeah. I laughed way more in Parasite than I thought I was going to. I put off watching Parasite so long because it looked, because all I heard was about the income gap and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, this sounds like such a downer. And I was shocked at how much fun that movie was.
And that's what I'm not getting from the current crop of nominees. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, I would say take time, watch Nomadland. I'm not going to say it's fun, but it's definitely, it's not what you think it is.
And I'm going to try to watch as many as I can, the best picture nominees before the ceremony. It's a month. It's like April 25th. We're about a month away. There are 8 films nominated. I don't know if I put The Father, though.
As always, you two let me know if there's anything I need to watch. I'm good.
All right. Well, we'll be back probably right before the ceremony.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens.
We can only do this. We recorded last month's episode exactly a month ago from today. Uh-huh. So we can only do it in 30-day increments. So
we're actually got to do some shit. But I know that in that time, it's very possible that I will have seen Two Gun. I will have seen Equalizer 1 and Equalizer 2. I may try to watch Malcolm X again.
Hey, Josh.
Watch Philadelphia.
They didn't land on Plymouth Rock.
Plymouth Rock landed on them.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to watch all of St. Elsewhere.
Ooh, nice.
Deep cut. Deep Denzel cut.
He is prominently featured on the screenshot of that.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I actually watched, I remember at one point from Netflix, I watched the first season. He was barely in it. It was a lot more Howie Mandel than there was Denzel Washington. Which in retrospect, not a great choice.
Watch Fences. It was very, very good.
I will. I think the time that I tried to watch it, I was like, I think it was a Friday night, and I was like, I don't have this in me right now.
Yeah.
Because it's very much like a stage play.
Yeah.
You know what I want to watch again? I want to watch Drive again. I haven't thought about that movie in ages, but I would watch that movie again.
I didn't like that. Good music. I didn't get it. I didn't get the point.
You know, the thing about Oscar Isaac is that he pops up more often than you realize.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've come across him in other films. I'm like, wait, that's Oscar Isaac. He's the bad guy in Robin Hood.
The Russell Crowe one?
Russell Crowe one. Wow, he's like the sheriff.
Really?
He's the sheriff. He's the prince.
Ryan Gosling is on the team in Remember the Titans.
Interesting.
As is Ethan Suplee and that guy from the guy from Saving Private Ryan, who had his hearing blown out by the bomb. He's like the lead on the team. And the guy who plays Avon Barksdale is the other guy.
He was Prince John in Robin Hood, 2010. Oscar Isaac. Yeah. It was on HBO the other day. And I came across it and I was like, is that Oscar Isaac? And it was. Only 3 years before Inside Llewyn Davis.
That is one of the things that's really fun about watching movies from the early 2000s is that you see all of the character actors show up in stuff that you didn't, when you didn't know them then.
Right. That was basically his first big film.
Who?
It was Oscar Isaac. He did Robin Hood, then Sucker Punch, then Drive.
Sucker Punch. Jeez.
He was in Sucker Punch?
Apparently. He was Blue Jones. I never.
That's
what
crazy.
Was that movie that I was just talking about, Connor, where I said everybody is in this movie and Jeremy Strong was in it? What was the movie I just watched?
Oh,
Man, Oscar Isaac is doing everything, by the way.
Yeah.
He was the lead on a David Simon miniseries about Yonkers in the late 70s.
Well, that was after he was already a star, though.
No, I know. But he's in Dune.
Yeah.
Right? He was in Star Wars. He's doing the Metal Gear Solid.
He's leaning into genre.
Right.
Josh, you were talking about Lincoln.
Lincoln. That's the one.
Lincoln.
2011. Yeah. There's a billion people who became stars
2012.
In that.
Yes.
That's crazy.
12, I guess.
Yeah.
I have a very specific memory. At some point, like the two trailers that had come out around the same time were the first Avengers movie and the Lincoln trailer. And everyone was talking about the Avengers. And I was like, I would see Lincoln over that any day.
I did a Lincoln and Skyfall double feature day. I saw Lincoln, had lunch, and saw Skyfall. It was a terrific day.
It was a good day.
Yeah.
Show Me a Hero was so good.
I'm just going to get back to close it out. Again, like what would I do now for a double feature? Tough.
You do it at home, and then you'd be like, shit, I got a vacuum.
Got to take a nap, because I'm old. All right, so that was our media explode for March, where we hotly debated the state of the movies. You can go to ifanboy.com. There'll be a post for this show. You can talk about the movies. You can write us at contact@ifanboy.com. We will take email questions on the larger media world. You can always listen to our weekly Pick of the Week show, and Josh and I talk about the week's comics. You can listen to all of our various bonus content that was unlocked by the patrons or patreon.com/ifanboy. You can listen to Ron and All About Android. That's where you can find all of us on a monthly basis. And we'll be back next month, right before the Oscars. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Josh. Thank you, and we're sorry.
I'm so sorry.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.